Brought to you by Thomas Allgaier and Friendus. This edition highlights key LinkedIn posts on social selling in weeks 27 and 28. Friendus supports clients with identifying target attendees for events, crafting outreach that cuts through the noise, and driving qualified registrations through strategic LinkedIn engagement. You can find more info in the description.
Oh, and just imagine, right, opening your analytics dashboard tomorrow and seeing that by simply, you know, cutting your outreach message by like 70%, your response rate just skyrockets from 4% to 31%.
Yeah, or realizing that this rigid sales funnel your team spent, I don't know, 6 months building is actually actively preventing your best buyers from closing.
Right.
So today we are doing a deep dive into the absolute top social selling trends for B2B marketing professionals. We've sifted through just a mountain of insights from calendar weeks 27 and 28, and our mission here is to extract the exact mechanisms like the why and the how behind what is actually driving revenue on LinkedIn right now.
It really is a fascinating stack of material this week. I mean, when you look at the raw data and the strategic shifts these practitioners are sharing, a massive recalibration just becomes totally obvious.
Oh, absolutely.
Social selling has completely moved past, you know, random acts of posting or just dropping connection requests into the void. It is now a highly engineered revenue system.
Yeah.
But that system only generates pipeline if you actually understand the new algorithmic rules and, well, the psychological shifts that are governing B2B buyers today.
Okay, so let's unpack this, because I think a lot of B2B teams are still operating on a playbook from, what, 3 years ago?
Oh, easily. Maybe five.
Right. So we need to start at the macro level.
Yeah.
The foundational philosophy of what LinkedIn actually is for a B2B company has changed. I mean, it's no longer just a digital notice board.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. David Walsh shared this brilliant post pointing out that 90% of their revenue comes from LinkedIn. But he made a critical distinction. He said that only happens if you stop treating the platform like a company bulletin board.
Right. The whole excited to announce our new VP stuff.
Exactly. Excited to announce or look at our team at the bowling alley posts. He argues you have to treat it as a distribution channel. Like, you need to be posting five times a week with the specific intent of seamlessly capturing demand, not just creating it.
And that distinction, right, between creating demand and capturing it, that's where most marketing teams just totally fail.
Yeah.
It is the defining line between a social media strategy, which, you know, just hunts for likes, and a revenue strategy, which actually hunts for pipeline.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Charles Thompson provided a framework that synthesizes this perfectly. He pointed out that content, so the thought leadership posts, the videos, the carousels, is actually only one third of the job.
Wait, only a third? Because I know a lot of content marketers who spend, 40 hours a week agonizing over those carousels. That is going to sting.
It might sting, yeah, but the data doesn't really care about our feelings, right? The other two thirds of the job, according to Thompson, are intent and outbound. So think of it this way. Content warms the market. It gets your name out there so you aren't, you know, a complete stranger. But without tracking buying signals, which we call intent, and then actually executing outbound outreach, that content is just noise.
So what exactly counts as an intent signal here?
Well, an intent signal is simply a digital footprint a buyer leaves when they're trying to solve a problem. It could be someone viewing your profile, a prospect engaging with a competitor's post about a specific software integration, or even, you know, a company announcing a new round of funding.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Intent without outbound is just wasted intelligence. And outbound without content just means the prospect deletes your message and completely forgets you by Thursday.
Okay, I'm going to heavily push back on you here, just representing the skeptics listening right now.
Mm-hmm.
If content is only a third of the battle, and it's all about this intent-driven outbound, does this mean traditional company pages are completely dead?
What?
Because marketing teams spend tens of thousands of dollars polishing these pages, right? Because they serve as a digital storefront. If a prospect looks up a company and the page is a ghost town, doesn't that instantly destroy credibility?
You are absolutely right that a ghost town destroys credibility. The digital storefront still needs the lights on, obviously, but there is a massive difference between keeping the lights on and expecting the storefront to generate its own foot traffic.
Right.
Alit Dotson actually touched on this perfectly. She works with established women entrepreneurs and noted that they often treat LinkedIn like a passive bulletin board, you know, just waiting for inbound leads. She used this incredible phrase. She said, visibility without strategy is just noise with better lighting.
Noise with better lighting.
Wow.
That is brilliant. It means you look professional, but you aren't actually guiding the buyer to do anything.
Precisely. If a company page is just broadcasting polished, faceless updates, it is dead weight in today's algorithmic landscape. Zaid Sayali shared a massive success story that proves how you actually bridge this gap.
Oh, I saw this one.
Yeah, his team closed over $420,000 in new monthly recurring revenue. And they didn't do it by waiting for inbound leads to magically appear from a company page graphic. They combined founder-led content, warm outbound messaging, and a weekly newsletter.
Okay, so a multi-layered approach.
Right. The founder posts real stories and gritty data every day to build the audience. Then they use the newsletter to capture emails. Finally, and this is the key, they monitor who is clicking the links in that newsletter, so that is the intent signal, and they trigger highly personalized outreach to those specific individuals.
So they are actively connecting the dots. They aren't throwing a net into the ocean and hoping a fish jumps in. They're using radar to find the fish, warming the water, and then casting a very specific line.
Exactly.
Which, you know, brings up a fascinating point from Waqas Kokar about how we view the buyer's journey. Because for decades, marketers have relied on these elaborate linear funnels. You know, the ones, the classic TOFU, MOFU, BOFU structure, top of funnel, middle of funnel, bottom of funnel.
Oh, yeah. The assumption that buyers act like obedient sheep walking through a gate.
Exactly. We assume they view a broad awareness ad, right?
Right.
Top of funnel. Then a few weeks later, they magically graduate to an educational webinar, so middle of funnel. And finally, when they are perfectly ripe, we serve them a pricing case study, bottom of funnel.
And Kokar argues that trying to gatekeep content by those traditional stages actually actively blocks ready buyers.
It blocks them.
Yeah, because B2B buyers today do not move in a straight line. They wander. They research totally out of order. Let's say a buyer visits your pricing page because a colleague recommended you, but they haven't engaged with any of your top of funnel awareness ads. A rigid CRM system keeps them locked in the awareness bucket.
Right.
So they never receive the case study that would have closed the deal that very afternoon.
Wow. So traditional TOFU, MOF, BOFU marketing is basically like a forced theme park ride.
Mm-hmm.
You have to sit through the slow haunted house before you are allowed to get on the roller coaster.
That's a great way to put it.
But Kokar is saying modern buyers treat it like an open world video game. They want to wander straight to the final boss, you know, the pricing and implementation details, without doing all the side quests.
That is the perfect analogy. You have to stop defining the funnel by who sees the ad and start defining it by what the content actually does. You run awareness, education, and conversion content simultaneously so buyers can self-select based on their immediate need.
But here's the major friction point we run into. If buyers are skipping straight to the end, and we've established that outbound is the crucial engine to capture them, how do we reach out without turning them off? Like, if you were listening to this right now, think about your own inbox this morning. How many 300-word pitches did you instantly delete without reading past the first sentence?
Probably all of them.
Yeah.
And that is exactly what Connor Paulson addressed. He shared this dramatic data point from sending 1,000 LinkedIn messages. He changed one single variable and took his response rate from 4% to 31%.
I mean, a jump from 4% to 31% is the kind of metric that makes a career. And the secret, he just cut his messages from 200 words down to a 67-word framework. He stopped writing these massive novels explaining every single feature his company offers and instead focused entirely on the prospect's problem.
He used a phrase that perfectly encapsulates the psychology of social selling right now. He said, short messages whisper confidence, long messages scream desperation.
Man, I want to linger on that for a second because it's so powerful.
Yeah.
Why does a long message feel desperate psychologically? I mean, shouldn't more info be better?
Well, because a long message assumes the buyer owes you their time. It demands that the prospect stop what they are doing and read 5 paragraphs about a stranger's company. It signals that you don't respect their inbox, and worse, it signals that you are trying to close a massive deal in a single breath.
Right, like proposing on a first date.
Exactly. True experts don't need 300 words to prove their value. They only need one sharp insight.
And this aligns flawlessly with what Nicholas Siljanowski found. His team at Growth Today analyzed 50,000 LinkedIn direct messages. 50,000.
That's a huge data set.
Yeah, and they found that the inbox preview on LinkedIn is incredibly harsh. On mobile, the app only previews the first 60 characters of your message. Mm-hmm. If you do not earn the open right there, the rest of your carefully crafted pitch is totally irrelevant.
Yep.
He also found a massive red flag. If you use a Calendly link or a meeting link in that very first message, reply rates drop by a staggering 60%.
Because dropping a calendar link in a first message instantly flags you as a salesperson trying to take something from them, namely their time, before you have offered any value, it triggers all of their defensive walls.
Makes total sense.
So to combat this, Siljanovsky advocates for a very strict, highly engineered six-line structure.
Okay, let's break this six-line structure down. Because I've definitely been guilty of writing the terrible, "Hi, we are a leading provider of enterprise synergy solutions. Here is my link message."
Yeah.
How does this actually work mechanically?
Okay, so line one is a signal opener. This is where you prove you aren't an automated bot by referencing something specific they actually did in the last 30 days. For example, saw your team just hired 3 new SDRs.
Okay, very specific.
Right. Then line two is a relevance bridge. You connect that signal to a common pain point, like usually onboarding that many reps strains the training budget. Line three is a single credibility line with a concrete data point. We helped Company X cut ramp time by 40%.
So no fluff, just fact, pain, proof. What are the last three lines?
Line four is a micro ask. You do not ask for a meeting, you just ask for permission to share a resource. Mind if I send over the onboarding checklist we used for them? Line five is the secret weapon, an optional out.
Oh, I like that.
You literally give them permission to say no. No worries if this isn't a priority right now. And line six is just a simple sign off.
Giving them the optional out is fascinating because by telling them they can say no, you lower their defenses. You are handing them back the autonomy you just interrupted. But here's where it gets really interesting. If you are selling a highly complex $1 million B2B software package, how do you possibly sell that in 67 words?
Well, you don't. And that is the trap most marketers fall into. You are not trying to fit a George R. Martin novel onto a single post-it note. The goal of the direct message isn't to sell the software. The goal is to sell the conversation.
Right.
A highly complex sale is going to require multiple meetings, deep discovery calls, and stakeholder alignment. You cannot bypass that process in a DM. Your only job in that initial outreach is to prove that you understand their specific world enough to warrant a 15-minute chat. You are selling the next step, not the final destination.
Which perfectly sets up the ultimate friction point of this entire strategy.
Hi.
If we are stripping our pitches down to just 67 words, we lose the space to explain why we are credible. How do you get a buyer to trust a six-line message from a total stranger? I mean, they have to already know who you are before you hit send. Familiarity is the required prerequisite. Abhishek GP made a brilliant point about this. He said that in B2B, familiarity is the new permission slip for sales.
Yes, he referred to it as the stranger tax.
The stranger tax.
Yeah,
I love that concept. Your brain naturally files an unfamiliar brand wanting my attention in the exact same mental drawer as a pop-up ad, and it just shuts it down.
Yep, immediate block.
Every unknown company pays this stranger tax when they do outbound, but a buyer will stop scrolling for a person they recognize. Abhishek noted that a mediocre post from a recognizable human completely beats a polished, highly produced post from a faceless logo.
What's fascinating here is how this human-first behavior isn't just a psychological preference anymore. It is now being hard-coded into the platform itself. Chris Steffens outlined a major new LinkedIn algorithm update, codenamed 360 Brew, which rolled out alongside an authenticity update. The platform is now actively penalizing generic AI slop and engagement bait.
By engagement bait, you mean those terrible posts that end with, "Do you agree? Comment your thoughts below," just to artificially inflate the comments.
Exactly. Those are getting heavily throttled now. Instead, the 360 Brew algorithm is heavily rewarding saves and sends via direct message.
Interesting.
Think about the mechanics of a save. When a user bookmarks a post, it tells the algorithm that this content isn't just a quick hit of dopamine, you know. It is a reference tool. It is deeply valuable. A post that someone bookmarks for later drives up to 5 times more reach than a standard like. The platform wants to become a utility, not just a scrolling addiction. It is optimizing for deep, niche expertise.
So what does this all mean for the modern marketer? If the algorithm is hunting down and penalizing AI slop, is AI essentially becoming the enemy of the B2B marketer?
Not necessarily.
Because, I mean, are we supposed to completely abandon tools like Claude and ChatGPT when we build these social selling systems? Because earlier we talked about needing a highly calibrated revenue machine, and you really can't build that by hand.
It is not about abandoning AI at all. It is about understanding its proper placement in the workflow. AI is incredible for backend operations. Vanessa Ponce and Sergio Alfaro both detailed how they are using Claude to build highly sophisticated, automated lead generation engines.
Okay, so backend, not frontend.
Right. They use AI agents to track those intent signals we talked about earlier. AI scrapes the data, it filters the ideal customer profiles, and drafts the initial variations of those six-line DM templates based on specific triggers. It handles all the heavy lifting of list building and initial targeting.
Right. Abhishek GP mentioned that too, actually. Having agents handle the grunt work nobody misses, like list enrichment and scheduling the first three follow-ups.
Precisely. But, and this is the critical distinction we really have to make here, Heather Adkins pointed out that AI completely commoditizes generic content.
Oh, absolutely.
Polished prose and clean, perfectly structured arguments are now free and infinite. Anyone can ask ChatGPT to write a thought leadership piece. Therefore, an unfiltered, specific, uniquely human voice is the only true differentiator left on the front end. The brands that win the feed will win on conviction, specificity, and a point of view.
He advised executives to stop making flashy Lamborghini content and start making functional Toyota Prius content.
Oh, explain the mechanics of that for the listener, because it's such a great visual.
So Lamborghini content is the highly produced, corporate-approved thought leadership video. You know, it looks expensive, it sounds profound, and gets tons of likes from your peers and other marketers, but it doesn't actually help a buyer. Toyota Prius content is gritty and functional. It's like a screenshot of a messy spreadsheet showing exactly how you fixed a pipeline bottleneck. It isn't pretty, but it actually gets the buyer to their destination. The Lamborghini gets attention from the wrong people, while the Prius actually gets you to the closing table.
I love that. And this brings us to the final major shift we saw in weeks 27 and 28. If gritty, authentic human voice is the ultimate algorithm hack right now, forward-thinking B2B companies realize they have a scaling problem. You cannot manufacture authenticity from a corporate marketing desk.
No, you definitely can't.
So they are completely restructuring their employee advocacy programs. They are moving away from forcing corporate reposts to actively funding and enabling internal creators.
Mike Adams shared a highly relatable insight on this. He compared successful employee advocacy to the Norwegian football fans' row, row chant. Have you seen this?
I think so, yeah.
It's thousands of fans doing a simple, unified rowing motion together in the stands. It is simple, it's unforced, and it's a repeatable ritual. He argues that most companies fail because they ask their employees to become full-blown thought leaders overnight. You know, write original posts, build a brand, find topics. That is way too much friction. Instead, companies need to find one simple, unified LinkedIn behavior everyone can repeat every week.
And we are seeing massive corporate shifts proving that the old model of forced robotic compliance is just dead. Celinda Appleby noted that Visa just launched an employee creator network.
Wow, Visa.
Yeah, they realize that employees building their own audiences and sharing their granular expertise humanizes the brand in ways corporate channels simply cannot. They are treating employees as creators, providing coaching and resources, not just emailing a weekly calendar of approved links to share. And Bonnie Dilber shared an even more radical step. Starbucks is actually piloting a program where they pay baristas who have large followings to create content.
It's exactly like a major record label deciding to fund independent indie artists who already have a grassroots following instead of trying to artificially manufacture a sterile boy band in a corporate boardroom.
It's a perfect comparison.
But how do companies handle that loss of control? Because marketing teams historically love to control every syllable of the message. If you let hundreds of employees post whatever they want, doesn't that risk brand safety?
Well, they handle it by providing frameworks, not scripts. Lexi Graham pointed out that handing the mic to your team without a framework doesn't get you authenticity. It gets you chaos.
Right.
You define the tone of voice, the core pillars, and the guidelines up front, and then you trust your people to run with it. But there's also a game-changing new platform feature that addresses this exact dynamic mentioned by both Charlie Whitehead and Alexandra Wren, and that's LinkedIn's collaborative posts.
Oh, this feature completely changes the game. How does it work mechanically on the feed?
It fundamentally changes the architecture of company content. Instead of the company page posting an update and then begging employees to awkwardly repost it days later, members and company pages can now co-author a single post. When it goes live, both profile pictures and both names appear at the top of the post. The feed distributes it to both audiences simultaneously.
That is massive. The company gets the employee's authentic storytelling voice, which the algorithm loves, and the employee gets the visibility and credibility of being officially linked to the brand's big announcement or case study. It solves that terrible feeling where an employee feels like an unpaid marketing intern just echoing corporate PR.
Yeah, nobody wants to feel like that.
It builds a shared reputation natively.
Exactly. It turns isolated voices into a unified, credible chorus. The friction has entirely moved from content creation to content resonance.
Well, we have covered an immense amount of ground today. We moved from understanding why LinkedIn must be treated as an integrated revenue engine to the exact six-line framework that takes outreach response rates from 4% to 31%. We unpacked how the new 360 Brew algorithm punishes AI slop and rewards the messy, authentic Toyota Prius content. And we looked at how collaborative posts are turning employees into empowered creators. If you enjoyed this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on account-based marketing, field marketing, channel marketing, MarTech, go-to-market, and AI and B2B marketing. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Make sure you hit subscribe so you never miss an edition.
Before you go, consider this one final unexplored nugget from the sources we analyzed. Arpit Singh shared some fascinating data that should reframe how you think about all of this. LinkedIn has just become the number two most cited source in AI search, right behind YouTube.
When buyers use tools like Perplexity or ChatGPT to research a problem, they aren't just scanning 10 blue links in Google anymore. They are asking AI, and the AI is heavily citing LinkedIn creators as the primary experts. So as you optimize your B2B content strategy this week, ask yourself, are you just writing for the fleeting attention of the LinkedIn feed today, or are you structuring your deep expertise so that AI engines cite you as the definitive answer tomorrow?